Lance, and a very warm welcome. You're listening to episode 5, season 3 of the Johnny and Josh Show. We have been on air for, 6 weeks? I've been available every Sunday, sitting at my computer desk, ready to transmit. But unfortunately, I'm joined by the two very non-professional broadcasters who put other things before this podcast. I can only apologise to all our listeners, but it is, as always, a very busy summer. And what a pleasure to welcome my baseball brothers back. And that is, of course, Eric, the producer, and the legendary sport pundit, the greatest sports pundit in the history of TV. I'm not exaggerating. Mr. Josh Chetwynd. JC, what a pleasure.
Hey, Gouldy, how you doing? I'm sad that David couldn't make it. I feel like he's holding out for more money. He's like Sandy Koufax.
He's in Japan, buddy. He's in Japan. Eric's been in Italy. I've been in Cyprus. You've been saving the world.
I've been, just working. You guys all go on these fancy, fantastic trips. I save that for the fall and winter months when I go curling and I go to such exotic places as Blaine, Minnesota.
You just live such a rock and roll life. I love it. I go curling. let my hair down.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit of a poetic irony, rock and roll and curling.
Very punny, Gouldy.
Well, yeah, no idea what you're talking about, if I'm brutally honest.
they use rocks in curling, buddy.
And they roll.
Hey, Eric, what about Italy, buddy? How was the Commonwealth
Games? Italy was fantastic. Well, the Commonwealth Games were not in Italy. But
no, but you went to Italy before.
I went to Italy for Major League Baseball, that's right, for their Italian Academy, their Italian game development program with Major League Baseball staff, Major League Baseball coach. I met some fantastic baseball folk there and had a lot of pasta and a lot of gelato, as my stomach can attest to.
Pasta?
Pasta with pesto, yeah.
Is that a Canadian pronunciation?
Actually, in fact, it was squid ink pasta.
What?
It's black pasta. It's got to be done. I was in Venice
black
as well.
Pasta.
And what about the Commonwealth Games? That looked fun.
Commonwealth Games is, yes, I was working on the Commonwealth Games, everyone. For those who don't know what the Commonwealth Games are, it's Commonwealth Nations, it's an Olympics-esque kind of tournament, many events. United States could have been there too, but instead they chose to throw tea into their harbor ages ago. So they couldn't, that's why they're not involved in the Commonwealth Games.
It's their loss, buddy.
But as I was in the Birmingham area, the Leamington Spa area, working on the Commonwealth Games for 11 days, had a lot of fun meeting people from the Cook Islands, from Fiji, from the Solomon Islands, from places that you forget are actually Commonwealth nations, had a great time. And now here we are talking baseball.
Absolutely. Kenya, Uganda, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Have you noticed a theme here, guys? These are great countries and they're all members of the Commonwealth. What does that tell you, JC?
That you're imperialist at heart.
Exactly. Well, guys, it's episode 5. You know how we love to traditionally kick things off with just that little somber moment, a little spiritual moment. The meaning of the number 5, and this is according to the Secret of the Tarot, not the most religious of sources, if I'm brutally honest, is it usually indicates someone who's full of energy, but unable to channel it responsibly. Does that remind you of anyone?
That's probably all of us.
It is probably all of us, yeah. And in numerology, try saying that at the end of a long, hard day, the number 5 represents spiritual growth and self-confidence. And I think that's very, very appropriate because I think we're all spiritually very grown. And I think we've all got a lot of self-confidence. And 5 is clearly a number that's had a big impact on our life. Obviously, I'm relating back all those years, Channel 5 Baseball, 1997 to 2008. Can you believe it's 14 years ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
Long time, isn't it? Long time.
It is a long time.
Long
good
time.
Times. Anyway. Good times. All right. Let's save the nostalgia for off air.
Okay. Let's talk number 5. Let's talk some of the great players. Now, I know there's some much better players, but one of my all-time favorites, certainly from our era when we were presenting Channel 5 Baseball, Jeff Bagwell. There's a number 5 for you. I love Jeff.
I'll tell you my favorite number. One of my favorite number 5s is Luke Appling, a Hall of Famer, shortstop. If you go on to YouTube, maybe Eric can find this. It's pretty easy to find. When he was in his, I think, late 70s, he played in an old-timer game in Washington, D.C. He was, I can't remember who he was facing, but he was, certainly very old, very past it. He had a home run. I mean, there were like all these younger stars. I mean, he was a star of, many generations earlier. And it's one of my favorite moments in baseball. And I know that wasn't during his regular career, but look it up. It'll put a smile on anyone's face.
Okay, well, there's some other big names: Johnny Bench, George Brett, Albert Pujols. Cards will retire as number five. That's confirmed. But will the Angels, JC?
I'm saying absolutely. Like, you want to be in the reflection of greatness, and you spend that much money on a contract that probably didn't come close to being fulfilling in terms of worth.
That's true.
You want to at least have that player connected to your team. And the way to do it is retire the number.
But what did he do for them? Nothing. You know,
doesn't matter. That's you know.
I love that quote, by the way, buddy. Is that why Eric looks in the mirror a lot? Because he wants to be in the reflection of greatness. That's a great quote. Love that.
You know, the thing is if you think about it, retiring numbers is like a marketing ploy, right? I mean, it's about respect for the players, but it's also to connect the team to those players and a reminder of the list of great athletes who had come through your organization. Yeah. So it does something for the organization as much as it does for the player.
But it's also been adopted over here. This is one thing that very much did start across the pond, but now we're all doing it. We've got a Rugby Hall of Fame, Football Hall of Fame, but they're all off the back of what North American sport's been doing. So for once, it didn't originate this side of the pond. It originated the other side.
Yeah,
as a concept.
But don't forget, I think we mentioned this on another show. It was Aussie Rules Football who the first sport to introduce numbers on the back of shirts. So
gotta
get another accolades. One other number five that you're missing out on is Hank Greenberg of the Detroit Tigers. The Hebrew Hammer, he was called. One of the few Jewish players, especially when you think, like, he was talking about all the anti-Semitic abuse he got in the 30s and 40s, being one of the few Jewish baseball players around. And when Jackie Robinson broke into the league, he wanted to be the first one to congratulate him via telegram, say, welcome to the league, get ready, even for a lot of abuse. So,
yeah, I mean,
do you think he gets the credit that he deserves? When you consider that he was a pathfinder and he did take a lot of crap.
Well, I mean, there were certainly other Jewish players who played. It was just that he was so high profile and such a great player that a lot more attention was refracted onto him.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was Andy Cohen. There were a number of players in that era. And there were actually some New York teams that were kind of looking for Jewish players during that period because there was such a huge Jewish population and they saw it as a way to drive attendance a little bit. But there was, I mean, Hank Greenberg really stood out until Sandy Koufax as a player who represented that culture and that faith, along with being an amazing baseball player.
Of course, the one, number five, we have to mention, that we've yet to mention, probably one of the greatest of all time, Joe DiMaggio.
Heard of him.
Heard of him?
Yeah.
Decent? Half decent?
I think he's only famous for Marilyn Monroe, and that's besides a 56-game hitting streak. And,
you know. Let me be brutally honest. Does that not really piss you off? I mean, you know, it's not being one of the greatest players ever enough. You end up getting married to Marilyn Monroe. That
you
just seems
that,
greedy.
But well, if you know the history, it was a curse for him. I mean, because he loved her. They ended up breaking up.
Yeah.
It broke his heart forever. It was not, that was not a stroke of luck. That was a curse on his life to a certain extent. He was a really fascinating behind the scenes individual. I mean, he was a guy who outwardly seemed so calm, collected. He always said, I want to play hard, because you never know when a kid is seeing you play for the first time. Internally, he was a chain smoker. He had trouble sleeping. He had ulcers. He carried the weight of the world upon him, but outwardly was so stoic. It was a very difficult line to toe for him. So, you know, you talk about it from the outside as, oh, wow, what a great life. And to be honest, I think he struggled a lot of times.
I'm going to offer you my unique insight on this. Even if he knew what was in store, you're offered the chance to be married to Marilyn Monroe, you're saying yes, regardless. No. You're still saying yes, guys.
No. why would you be miserable? I mean, you know,
well,
I know
she
was
that
beautiful.
That is a misery that's worth having. I mean, the great stories at dinner parties.
Yeah, now we're waffling.
That is so
moving on.
Yeah, let's waffle that. But
we're waffling on now.
That is so not DiMaggio to go to a dinner party and talk out of school. That's Johnny.
Moving on. Moving on.
Okay. COVID update.
Well,
Eric, you've had it since we were last on air.
Since we were last on air, I got COVID.
You okay?
Luckily for me, it was a mild case. But unfortunately, our esteemed colleague and friend, David Langell, also had it, but he had it way worse than I did. He really struggled with it. So You know, it, yes, it does feel like we're on the, hopefully we're on the other end of this pandemic and where life is slowly coming back to normal, but it's not gone. Bottom line is Dave's fine. I'm fine. Get your jab. Well, then we'll all be fine.
But that, I mean, the biggest COVID story I thought was the Whit Merrifield story, which to me is fascinating and fun.
Speaking of Canadian borders, exactly. Please proceed, Josh.
Well, Whit Merrifield, when, was meant to go. The Royals were going for their first series up in Toronto. And it was shocking, right? I think it was 10 players who on the Royals roster had not been jabbed and could not make the trip. Great time to be a minor leaguer in the Royals organization because they had to backfill that whole roster. But when Whit Merrifield was asked about this, he's a player who is generally very well respected. I think he dropped a number of rungs in terms of the reputation ladder for many people. But he said, well, you know, I've been really paying attention to this and I just realized it's not right for me. But, and this is one of the most disgusting caveats ever, if I were on a team and I had to go to Toronto, it was the playoffs, then I'd think about it. Well, understandably, Dayton Moore, who is a general manager I personally respect a great amount. When I was working as an agent, I dealt with him. I spent time with him. Just a guy of utmost integrity. He was clearly offended. I mean, the implication there, right, is the Royals suck, so I don't need to get jabbed. But if I play for someone better, I'm willing to make that effort. So Dayton Moore, and I don't know whether it was 100% because of this or whether this was just, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. He ends up trading him. Where does he trade him to?
Toronto. Love it.
Toronto.
Oh, exactly. My God.
Get
That's
your freaking
amazing.
Jab now. About, and of course, Whit Merrifield immediately got a jab, and he's playing for the Blue Jays now.
He did apologize. He did apologize for all his anti-vax comments that he said a few weeks prior, whether that's politically motivated or. And then the problem is that he started becoming a martyr for anti-vaxxers. I mean, I don't want to go down that route of let's not get down into a political discussion about this. But yes, he's now a Toronto Blue Jay, and he's had to adhere to, if he wants to cross that Canadian border and play home games, he's got to get a job. He's got his jab. He's now north of the border.
Okay, well,
can I make one say one thing? That this may have been the savviest baseball chess move I've ever heard of. Because maybe, you know, obviously the Royals weren't competing. Maybe it was a way to force ownership and to force Dayton Moore to trade him potentially to a team that's really good, like the Blue Jays, without actually asking for it. If he did that, I doubt that was what he was doing. But it would have been brilliant.
Now, here's the thing. Now, he was on on the verge of beating Cal Ripken's consecutive games playing streak. But he was at 553 games, consecutive games played. But then all of a sudden, I don't know if it's conspiracy theory says he did have an injured toe. He had to take himself out of a game. So now he was the active leader in consecutive games played at 553. So he had to stop playing. Now he's back. Then we had to go back to zero, start from scratch because of an alleged toe. Well, it was a toe injury. Some people are saying is because he didn't want to be traded to Toronto or didn't want to go north of the border to Toronto, or that was an excuse of why his streak ended. There you go.
We should point out that though he was the active leader, I mean, it's still pathetic. I mean, compared to Cal Ripken Jr., 2,632. It's a record that's never going to be broken. That's JC, you've got to agree with that.
We're moving on. I'll explain why we're moving on.
Okay. Right. Well, as always, we want you to get involved. We need you to hit the likes, the buttons at the bottom. It is, of course, the Johnny and Josh show. We need you to big us up on social media. You know that Eric works his absolute proverbials with the YouTube videos. They are back. So do check out our channel. And as always, I've been told, in case you are watching the YouTube, I've got a point at the bottom of the screen.
Subscribe.
There's the subscribe button.
It's not that hard. It's not that hard to do.
Okay. Talking of not being hard, Eric. What have you got this week?
Okay, so we have trivia. Our trivia is, you know, funny enough, it's
about streaks.
It's about streaks.
Oh, is it? Oh!
I figured that's why you said wait. I knew it. I knew you were saying,
I just given away the info?
No, not at all. No. Okay, because the thing is,
it's the follow-on. Who now is the leader?
Who now is he since Whit Merrifield stepped down?
I saw this. It was reflected in the glory of Eric's genius.
Exactly. And did I make it that obvious? Yes. Whit Merrifield has ended his attempt at trying to catch up with Cal Ripken Jr.'s, you know, unattainable record of most consecutive games played. His streak ended at 553. But so who is now the new active leader of games played? Is it A?
Just before you give the three options, will you tell us what their present total is?
No.
No. Okay. I apologize. Go on.
He's a remorseless mistress, isn't he?
So, who is now the current active leader and most consecutive games played in Major League Baseball? Is it A, Matt Olson? Or is it B, Dansby Swanson? Ooh. Or is it C, Austin Riley? Now, lo and behold, they all happen to be playing on the same team.
I know.
Golden. Wow.
Coincidence? Or not?
There it goes. Yeah. Okay.
So there's your three options. Who now is the current active leader in most career consecutive games played? Is Matt Olson, Dansby Swanson, or Austin Riley? Answer later on in the show.
Okay. Right, let's move things on. You just heard the bell. It's time for our leadoff batter, batter number one, and that is, of course, the news roundup. So what do we got? Big news stories made the headlines in July, where we're sport for choice. Let's kick things off, guys, with a Field of Dreams. Did you watch it? It's Cubs v. Reds.
Bit cheesy. I watched a bit.
Yeah.
I actually see it in my dreams, or may I say my nightmares, every time I see the hologram Harry Carey.
I know, that was a bit weird.
That was creepy, I gotta say.
If they're gonna do hologram Harry Carey, I want the version where he's drunk without a t-shirt on in the bleachers, because that's how I want to remember Harry Carey.
Now, for those
just completely sloshed. Yes, explain.
For those people who don't know what the heck exactly we're talking about, the Field of Dreams game. Johnny, do you want to explain?
Yeah, I mean, it's in honor, isn't it, of the great movie Kevin Costner. They've built a stadium. It's all very quaint. They wear the retro uniforms, and it is the venue is amazing. I mean, I'd love to go. I'll be honest, I'd love to go because it just looks the venue
last,
just as
last
as
year they did it with the Chicago White Sox and
which
the New York Yankees.
Yeah. And this year, obviously, it was the Cubs and the Reds.
And they come out of the corn.
And they come out of the corn, so they, you know, it's all a tipping of the hat to that great story. And I must admit, the concept's great for me. That I love the concept and everything that surrounds it. The baseball's, you know, I can leave it or not. I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't excite me. I've got to be honest. Once every 5 years, every 8 years, a yearly event. There, I think that baseball is the right idea about trying to pick unique and fresh venues. But once you've done it, you've done it, and you really need to kind of pivot and come up with something else rather than trying to go back to the well, especially for a movie that came out at the end of the 1980s. I mean, you're really, baseball is so ensconced in nostalgia, and that's fine. But like, the more you go to it, the more it just feels a little worn.
That's the thing. Yeah, it was cheesy. Yes, there was a lot of elements of cheese. When you had the Griffey father and son coming out of the cornfield and say, "Should we play catch, Dad?"
Well, that's a question first, Eric. I got to ask you. You know, in the movie, they say, "Would you like to play a game of catch as opposed to play catch?" And they actually asked a bunch of players. I'd never heard the phrase "play a game of catch." It's not a game. You just play catch.
Yeah.
And I always found that was always an interesting sort of wrinkle in that film.
I mean, I'm on the fence between the cheese, the nostalgia, the fun, the baseball element. Is it necessary? I'm with you. If is the novelty worn out already, and the second season of this happening? The Harry Carey hologram was creepy.
And we should explain who Harry Carey is to anyone who doesn't know. Very famous broadcaster for the White Sox for a time, primarily for the Cubs. He was sort of famous for singing, the seventh inning stretch, "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." He was known to very much like his beer. He owned a restaurant called Harry Carey's, which was very famous.
Which we ate
at many times when I lived in Chicago, went on recruiting trips there when players would come. And so, you know, a real icon in Chicago lore, but to have a hologram of him was just a bit
creepy. Yeah, they could have had Tupac singing with him, you know.
I'd tell you the highlight Michael for Jackson. Me. The highlight for me, guys, was when they mic'd up Joey Votto. I love listening to him talk baseball.
That was fun. I actually really enjoyed that. You can listen to Joey Votto
You don't need the Field of Dreams for that, though.
No.
He's great.
He's hilarious no matter what.
But his passion, I mean, he was moved by the experience of being a part of it. Do you see him now really setting down a marker for his future media career? Because let's face it, he is getting on a bit as a player.
He's such a character. I don't know. He's such like a loose cannon. I wonder whether people would want him on because, you know, you couldn't control Joey Votto.
That's part of the appeal.
The way I would love to see this type of game is to go to states that don't normally have Major League Baseball and do a tour around the U.S. Go to
Alaska
Idaho.
Or Hawaii.
Yeah, go to Alaska, which has a famous, or Hawaii, exactly. You know, we do this when we go abroad. Obviously, we're coming back to Great Britain, Paris. You know, we went to Sydney. Let's go to all the other states and talk about the baseball history, because every state has its own unique, really exciting baseball history. You know, most of them in the minor leagues, but like, you know, in Idaho, or go to Vegas. I mean, they'll probably end up having a major league team, but New Mexico, you know, all these different places. I think that would be really fun, and give each of these states a major league game a year.
Well, you just mentioned, of course, the London series that has been confirmed for 2023. Cubs Cards, big rivalry, akin to the one that we had back in whenever it was, 2019. Was it 2019?
Yeah, it was.
Yep. Wow. Yankees, Bo Sox. They have confirmed it's definitely coming back. The mayor's got all involved, which is great news for UK baseball fans. Meanwhile, we had the London Home Run Derby X.
Derby.
I apologize. Which we got involved in.
Pasta and derbies.
The one thing I have to say, guys, we offered as a competition. We had a couple of tickets. We met up with Gareth Neal, top boy. I'm going to be honest, it was disappointing, and it was for a lot of people. There were lots of things that I really think they didn't think through.
Now, you know what? I think from this point onwards, if we can't say anything nice at all, that's not to say anything at all.
Fair enough.
Always champion at the bet.
No, but you're right. I mean, at least they're trying.
Let's leave it at that. Things better left unsaid.
Go on social media to get a sense of what people thought. But Gareth,
we were there.
A top boy, and lovely to meet Gareth. And thanks for coming down.
And sorry, you won the competition.
Sorry. Okay, moving on. Chris Sale. Yet another accident, yet another injury, yet another visit to the IL. And this one, what, from a bicycle incident?
I think people forgot to tell him that the curse of the Bambino for Red Sox no longer exists. Because, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another with that guy. I mean, it's just a mess. And you talk about karma, right? He was an unvaxxed guy. So is that his karma hit? Yeah, he was riding his bicycle, fell off, broke a wrist, and he's out again.
Well, when you consider his injury record when long pre-COVID, so it can't be just about COVID and not being vaccinated. There must be other reasons as well. I do feel for him. He does seem to be completely jinxed. I tell you who isn't jinxed, but is out, and that is young Fernando Tatis. How sad is this? Maybe sad's the wrong word. How disappointing, because we were all so excited about this kid. He's now been done for the use of performance enhancing drugs, for PEDs. He's got an 80-game suspension. I mean, people are really, really angry. If you read up on social media, a lot of people say, oh, no wonder he was so good. He's basically a cheat. And his excuse, for me, just makes things worse. Am I right in saying he is saying something about ringworm treatment? I don't even know how that's an excuse. Can anybody explain?
It's still a bit, it's still under speculation. It's still early days of exactly what's happening with him being on performance enhancing drugs. The excuse that's come out is, yes, he had ringworm or has ringworm, and he got involved in a medication that ended up being one thing and then another one, and then next thing you know, he's in the gym with muscles and ringworm. I don't know. It's still early days.
Okay, I'm not going to defend him. I really know, you know, obviously none of us know the really specific details, but I will say that it is just vexing to me that a player of that level would get implicated. I mean, and would not, you know, figure out either to not do it or to do it in a way in which you mask it. I mean, to be quite honest, which is still a possibility to do. He's not a minor leaguer without means. He's a guy with a lot of means. And so, not that I say that cuts towards him having made a mistake and it being uncertain, but I'm saying it's just so unbelievable to me that he would get caught even if he was doing it, to be honest.
I've read on social media, guys. I mean, I've read a few people saying that 80 games is a nonsense. You know, you get done for any kind of drug, performance-enhancing drug for the Olympics, you're banned for 2 years. 80 games is half a season.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was a negotiation with the Players Association.
Do you think it's enough, though, JC?
It's strike one, right?
So yeah, it's strike one. I agree with Eric. I actually think it's okay. I mean, think about it, right? He's going to miss all this season and the first quarter of next season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty massive. I think that that's legitimate. And to be honest, if you're not Fernando Tatis Jr. and this happens, it's probably the end of your career anyway.
Do you know the most annoying?
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, buddy. Yeah, sorry, you hadn't finished.
I was going to say that most players who aren't stars who get binged by this, it's the end of their careers. I mean, 80 games. I've represented players who have gotten these type of suspensions. And unless you're someone of some high profile, it's really hard to come back from this. So I do think de facto it ends careers.
Jesse, picking up on what you've just said, the fact you've represented players that have been suspended, but how do you approach that as an agent? What do you say? Is there some sort of in the agent booklet, this is how you deal with these situations?
Well, first off, it's heartbreaking because whether you're Fernando Tatis or a minor leaguer striving, all these guys work really hard. It's not like a shortcut. It's often, I mean, at least the players that I knew, often from a place of fear that your career is not going to go out. This doesn't explain anything away or excuse it, but you want to understand the psyche. And, you know, you've worked with these players and been a cheerleader for them for so long, and your heart breaks for them. And I think that there, in certain instances, is, you know, an unwillingness. There's an embarrassment and an unwillingness to probably admit to the truth of it. I know that was the case in my situation where I wasn't certain that the player who I'd known for quite a long time was being totally honest. It was for a different type of drug than performance enhancing, but still drugs that got a suspension. And it was heartbreaking. I mean, it's just terrible. There are no winners in this. And you just, you know, you hope for the player that they can actually rebound, to be honest. And it's one of the rare times you feel bad. I mean, particularly, you got to feel bad for the Padres. I've seen a lot of people on social media who are pundits saying, see, I told you so. Don't give long-term contracts. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, hopefully, you know, he learns his lesson. Or hopefully he gets through his ringworm, because that could be a pain in the backside. Moving on.
Okay, big story. Solomon Bates. How significant is this for those people that don't know? Solomon Bates has come out and said, baseball player, and said, I am gay. Something that it still seems ridiculous to me that anybody should need to do or have to do, or it's even a story. But apparently we still live in a world where that is the case. How big a story is this over the pond, JC?
I mean, it was definitely reported. I think it's important to keep on having players come out so that we get to the point where we have an active player. Solomon Bates had been released, and then he made the disclosure about his sexuality. It's chipping away at what has been, I think, a long time coming. My hope is that at some point you're going to have major leaguers, true in all professional sports, and we're seeing it in certain ones where this is starting to break that barrier, where the players are comfortable talking about who they are while they're still playing and not feel that it will be a distraction. Yeah, it's interesting. I was watching The Captain, which is a series on Derek Jeter, produced by Derek Jeter, very much positive about Derek Jeter. And, you know, it's interesting from that standpoint. And I encourage people to watch it and see whether it's just a very, you know, very nostalgic tinged version, you know, infomercial on him. But one thing that I thought was interesting was him talking about distractions. There's one goal as a player was to avoid distractions at all costs. When he became owner of the Marlins and George Floyd happened, George Floyd being killed in Minnesota, huge issue, African-American killed by police. He came out and encouraged his players to talk, which was very different from his own personal view. It sounded like, at least from when he was a player. I think that athletes should be able to be themselves. I understand the desire to avoid distraction, but here's the thing, is if we get to the point where it's not a big deal, it no longer becomes a distraction. So if all the players that are out there, Billy Beane, not the GM, but the other Billy Beane who had played and then came out saying that he was Gay after his career. If all those players were able to come out and we do this in numbers, and there's, you know, probably statistically quite a few, then it won't be a distraction for anyone, because it will just be, okay, who cares? And that's what we need to get to. So each of these instances where a player announces who they are and are honest about it helps get us down that road.
Can't agree more. Okay, great story. Winton Bernard, almost 11 years in the minors, 31 years old, never gave up, lost his dad, mum, totally supportive, fully committed, and he finally gets the big call-up, and he gets a hit, and he gets a run scored. Great story. Love this.
Favorite story. This will always be my favorite story. You guys have both seen the movie Moneyball. The one line that's great is, how can you not be romantic about baseball? These are the stories that are the reminders of that. The grinding, the desire, the love of the game to keep going, to get to this point, no matter how long. And I can tell you, I know, as someone who had a brief minor league career, but represent a lot of people in minor league careers, it is not an easy road. It's not like you're swimming in it while you're in the minors till you get there. You are grinding so hard. Makes me so happy. I will ask you a trivia question. Do you know what the longest run of a minor leaguer was before making the major leagues ever? So Winton went 10 years, almost 11. What, do you know what the record is?
No.
16 years. A guy named John Lindsay. He ended up playing for the Dodgers very briefly in 2010, got one hit, 16 years. Those guys are my heroes. I got to say, like, to have that love, desire, and dedication for that long, it touches me big time.
And he said his actual line, "Mom, I'm going to the major leagues." Tears. She must have been in tears. Ah, love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Fantastic. As well. But not only that, did he get his first major league hit? He got his first stolen base right after that as well. And just what a kind of guy he is, this kind of guy he is. After the game was finished, he stuck around for 30 minutes after the game was over and tried to sign an autograph for every kid who wanted to sign baseball. What a guy. Yeah.
Definitely. What a great story. Can't agree more. Okay. Did you want to take this opportunity to talk about trades now, or do you want to do that a little bit later? Because obviously that's a big story.
Trades are later.
We'll do that later. Okay. Well, in that case, let's just talk about our dear old friend, A View to a Kill, Akil Baddoo. What's the story, Eric?
Well, last time we were on the show, he was with the Toledo Mudhens, and we were saying, Eric, he's in the minor leagues. Do we really want to bother with Akil Baddoo anymore? He's not a major leaguer. Well, guess what? After hitting .565 in 23 games with the Toledo Mudhens, he got 15 RBIs, and he was raking it, with the Toledo Mudhens, the Detroit Tiger affiliate, and he got called back up to the Detroit Tigers.
Yay!
He's back in the major leagues, but unfortunately, he's got zero home runs in the past month, one stolen base, and he's batting .179. So basically, what we're looking for is we need to find a league that's above AAA. And below major league for Akil Baddoo.
That's the famous title, right? You're a 4A player.
And that's the problem. He's like, there's been articles written in the Detroit Free Press about it's time to give up on Akil Baddoo. It's sad because he was the rookie phenom, the new big thing, the new marketing tool, the great, hope for the Detroit Tigers. And he's great at minor league level, but just not cutting it this season, having a dismal 2022.
I'm just going to keep on pushing for my boy, Johnny Schreiber, who keeps on doing great. Schreiber sighting. There you go. We did alliteration with Weaver Watch. It wasn't special, but
We are the jinx.
I've got to pick up on this, given the fact that you had minor league baseball experience and obviously semi-pro, etc. And ask you this. In cricket, okay, there was a batsman called Graham Hick, played for England. In the county scene, absolutely was the king. But he ended up being called a flat track bully because against county bowlers, he could take them all corners. But he never did that at test level. Mark Ramprakash, deemed to be the best batsman of his generation, yet never took that level to the test arena, even though he got plenty of opportunities. What is it about that mental step up? Some players who don't even have that level of talent that people like that have, but they go into the test arena, they're born to it. Is that purely mental?
No, I think it's physical too. I always used to joke when I came out to Europe and I actually had quite a bit of success. And I was like, I found my level. You know, honestly, athletes find their level. That's a huge part of it. I do think that there's one thing about baseball, because of the length of the season, that it's, you know, we've had this conversation before. Every player has a spectrum of their best day to their worst day. The tighter the spectrum is, the more likely you are to have a long major league career. It's about consistency. And I said that I had a player, Mark Loretta, who's a, 15 year major leaguer, two-time all-star, finished top 10 in the MVP. He actually, for a number of the years, we played college together for 4 years. For a number of those years, he wasn't the best player, but he was always the most consistent. So there were other players whose highs were higher. And that's the thing about when you get to the major league level, is that Akil Baddoo can have a great day. He can have a great small sample size, but it's about, can you maintain that for over 162 game schedule? And that is something different. And to your point, Goldie, that may be where the psychological part comes in.
Yeah.
That you're able to keep focused for a little longer, that even if you don't have the talent, you're able to just keep focused. And I don't know whether, I mean, obviously all those players can, I think Akil Baddoo on his day can hit any major leaguer. It's just, can he do it day in, day out? And that's the difference.
Okay, Eric, let's ring that bell. We've got loads more to get into this show.
Moving on.
Okay, second batter up. Let's have a look at the season so far. We've obviously had the trade deadline, which passed at the beginning of August. First thing I want to pick up on, last time we did the show, and I know it was 6 weeks ago, Yankees and Mets, comfortably the best teams in baseball. Not quite as dominant since we were last on air.
Well, and it's shocking, right? I mean, the Yankees went out. They got Benintendi. They went out and gotten Frankie Montas. I know they traded Montgomery away, but Montas, the lights-out pitcher when he was playing for the A's. And you think, okay, two things. One, you've improved your roster. Two, you've shown the players who are currently on the roster that you're committed. And then they struggle after that. So it's fascinating. The psychology seems to run counter to what you'd expect with a team like the Yankees. On the other side, you look at the Baltimore Orioles, they trade away Trey Mancini, who was one of the most amazing stories, came back from cancer. Jorge Lopez was one of the biggest breakout pitchers this year, all-star, and yet they continue to do well. So I don't know. Again, small sample sizes, we got to let it play out. So I wouldn't say like, oh, start panicking if you're a Yankees fan, or start, getting fitted for your World Series ring if you're an Orioles fan or an Oriole. But nevertheless, it is interesting and unexpected.
Because, the baseball's all about curses. We love a curse. Can we add the Joey Gallo curse or the Juan Soto curse to the long list of baseball curses?
That's the thing, people who aren't aware, Joey Gallo, who's doing abysmally with the New York Yankees, got traded to the LA Dodgers, and the Yankees sort of tanked and were like, well, something like 0-6, 0-7 after they traded him, and gave up their best team in the AL crown to the Houston Astros the past few days. So we should keep an eye on Gallo curse. Are they now cursed for getting rid of Joey Gallo? Josh, your thoughts?
That's just super silly.
I know. It's fun.
It's fun. I know. Okay. I don't want to take away your fun. Go nibble on a waffle.
Okay. Well, then in that case, is the Juan Soto trade to the Padres from the Nationals a curse in itself? It's like what's happening in San Diego.
I do. If you want to talk psychological San Diego, I think they need to get over the belief that the Dodgers are a better team than they are. Whenever they play, it's just they can't beat the Dodgers. And that's what kind of started that period of downfall for the Pods, where a four-game series, I believe they were swept by the Dodgers.
As soon as Soto got there. Yeah.
Right. And it's just that the Dodgers have a hold on them. It's something, it's just mesmerizing. I think that's not a curse. It's just a frustration that they need to somehow get over the hump. I definitely have had that in sports where their teams just have your number and you have to get a couple of victories to sort of gain traction again in those circumstances.
Have you guys heard about the Dairy Queen curse, by the way? Speaking of curses, current curses at the moment?
No.
The Dairy Queen approached four players. Can we market an ice cream with your name on it? So, for example,
that's a Cody Bellinger and Tatis, right?
Cody Bellinger ice cream, Tatis ice cream, Bryce Harper ice cream, and Tim Anderson ice cream was on offer. And I guess if you're a baseball player and Dairy Queen approaches you, can we market an ice cream after your name? No should be the answer, because you'll end up on the IL or busted for PED. There you go.
Just before we move on from the whole trade debate, guys, because obviously there were lots of others, but I mean, I just look at what the Padres did in that. I mean, I'm blown away by it.
Blockbuster.
I mean, it really was a blockbuster because, I mean, you could make the point now. If you look at their lineup, okay, Tatis is out for 80 games, he's suspended. But once he's back, is he possibly the best shortstop in baseball? Their third baseman, Manny Machado, is he the best third baseman in baseball? Soto is generally conceived, well, I personally would still go with Ronald Acuna, but a lot of people think he's the best outfielder in baseball. They also picked up Josh Hader, who has been, without question, the number one closer in baseball. I mean, that is a phenomenal lineup. Anything short of making the World Series is a disappointment for San Diego Padres.
Yeah, Preller, their GM, has been always a really great at this process of trading. I mean, think about the guys they got in the past when they got Mike Clevenger. He is a wheeler and dealer. The most fascinating part of all of that, right, was Eric Hosmer, who had a no trade clause. They were going to send him to the Nationals. He said, forget it. I am going to exercise my no trade clause. Ended up with the Red Sox, who wasn't on there. They basically gave him to the Red Sox, who had some first base trouble with Franchi Cordero, Bobby Dalbec. And the big loser on that was Luke Voit, who had been the DH for the Padres, yeah, who would have stuck around. But because they needed to fit someone else in there, he gets shipped off to the Nationals and leaves a contender to go to basement dweller.
Yeah, so I don't imagine Eric Hosmer's on his Christmas card list, because that's an absolute, and it's amazing that they just have no control about this. One day they're on a contending team and they're loving life. Let's face it, San Diego, what a great part of the world to live, and now bang, you're off to sweaty Washington.
Well, that's a point of negotiation, right? I don't know why it's sweaty in Washington particularly, but
at this time of year, are you kidding me?
It's sweaty in San Diego. It's sweaty everywhere.
Oh no, it's a lot nicer in San Diego. Yeah, you got the
sweaty in Bath.
JC, any other big winners do you see in the trades, in the sort of pre-trade deadline activity?
I mean, I think you mentioned the big ones, like clearly the Padres. I mean, the Yankees on paper have done quite well from this. I mean, I think more about the losers in this. I mean, the Red Sox, highly disappointing. They trade away Christian Vasquez. They were still in the playoff hunt, and you get to give away your catcher. And I don't think people realize like how huge it is to trade away your starting catcher, because it's not only the fact that he was a very good offensive piece on that team, but he knew the staff. He knew how to handle the staff. So when you give up a catcher like that, I know Vasquez was heartbroken. So think of him. I think of the Orioles. Obviously, the number of other teams did well, but the big ones, I think, are the Padres and the Yankees.
Guys, just to close this out, could I just rewind to the whole Joey Gallo and how, disastrous things were for him in New York? He was interviewed when prior to being clearly going to be traded. And the interviewer said, have you been living in Manhattan? And he said, yeah. And he said, what's it been like for you when Yankee fans notice you on the streets? Are they rough on you away from the ballpark? Because obviously he has absolutely stank the park up. And Gallo goes, I don't go out on the streets. And the interviewer goes, that's sad. And Gallo goes, yeah, I really don't want to show my face too much around here. I mean, that is brutal. That is brutal.
Going back to the documentary on Derek Jeter and the captain, there's so much talk about players who can handle the New York spotlight and those who cannot. And I mentioned Frankie Montes is one of the players who got traded to the Yankees. He's been playing in Oakland in a low pressure situation. His first outing was terrible with the Yankees, and it'll be interesting to see whether he can make that adjustment to playing in such a hothouse.
Yeah.
Now, let's bear in mind now, so we've seen the back of the trade deadline now. There's still more, there'll be some more movements by the time we get to our next show, no doubt. We're 6 weeks-ish away from the postseason from this point onwards.
Yeah.
And at the moment, this is how fun it's going to be. We have, like, you look at the American League wild card. There are seven, let's say maybe eight teams in contention for those three wildcard spots as we speak, as the time of recording. So we're looking at a very fun pennant race coming up.
Well, I mean, you're making an argument that expanding the playoffs was a good thing, which, has been highly contentious.
Very true.
If there was just one wild card, I don't think there would be eight teams. You would probably split that number at least, and it would be a little less exciting. So I definitely, you would have thought, right, that by expanding it, you'd have more buyers at the deadline. But then you see teams like the Orioles and the Red Sox, two teams that are in that race. Red Sox just sort of kind of fading, but the Orioles still in it, and they were still sellers. So it's hard to really understand what's motivating teams. Now, Mike Elias the GM for the Orioles has said that they're going to spend considerable money in the offseason. But why not now? I mean, why didn't they really go for it right now and get their team into the playoffs, get the fan base energized, and then double down in the offseason? It's interesting because that was one of the arguments for expanding the postseason.
And I can't agree with more, JT, when you actually look at the standings as of tonight. We're recording on Sunday night, the 14th of August. I mean, you know, they've got the same record as the Twins. They're no distance behind the Mariners. And I know they're fourth in their own division, but with so many wildcard spots, they are very much in contention. And they play good baseball. The Orioles are a good side. You, Eric, credit to you, buddy. You said when we were doing our preseason predictions, you said ALA's winners, the Orioles, and we laughed at you. Now, obviously, you were wrong. We had every right to laugh at you, but they are a lot better than I think anybody else gave credit.
I said they're going to be a dark horse. I didn't say they're going to be AL East winners. I can say you never know. I was kind of semi-joking, but semi-like, you know, they won't be the worst team in baseball this year is what I kind of was intimidating. And look at them now. Hey.
Hey, 2.5 games back of the Blue Jays, buddy.
You never know.
1.5 games back of the Rays. I mean, they're right in that AL East mix. And what about the National League, guys? Any surprises? I mean, the Braves got nice and close. Well, at one stage, I think 2.5 games back of the Mets. I think that that five-game matchup, did you see that series, JC, about a week ago? 5 games in 4 days, and I think the Mets won 4 of them. I mean, that just, to me, that said so much. Braves are having a great season. They're hitting .600 at the moment, but it's abundantly clear to me this Mets team is serious contenders.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think they have the pitching to do it. I think the team that surprised some people, I mean, I think at the start of the year, I certainly thought they were going to be good, but then sort of struggled. And then Joe Girardi left for the Phillies, who have proved to be able to get it together a little bit. There's always been so much criticism about their defense, questions about their pitching. They went out at the trading deadline and went out and got Syndergaard, I believe. And yep. You know, that's another team in that division. I mean, the East, it's been a while since the East has had some depth, and that's impressive to see at least 3 teams being competitive.
So the next 6 weeks should be interesting. Moving on.
Okay, batter number 3. And this one, it's sad and it's not sad, but it's massively sad to have to say goodbye to such a legend that is Vince Scully. But it's also not sad to be able to really focus and enjoy and embrace what an amazing human being he was, what an amazing character. And, you know, he's got his place there in baseball history and will forevermore.
Yeah, I rarely tweet, as you guys know. I mean, I wouldn't say rarely, but not too regularly. And certainly when I do, it's more retweeting, you know, British baseball, things of that nature, or it's things to do with my work. I was so moved when he passed away that I actually went on Twitter to just write about how he was the voice of my childhood and so many childhoods both before me and after me, 67 years on the mic for the Dodgers. Yeah. I can't think about, especially my age, you know, 50 years old and, you know, thinking back to the 70s and the 80s where people really did listen to games on the radio still. And I, you know, can't think of a night late at night, you know, late in Dodger game, turning on right before bed and listening to him. His voice was so unique. His ability to broadcast and have, I mean, what I respect was that this was a man who understood not just baseball, but the world. And he would integrate that in, whether it was philosophy or mythology or understanding the stories of the players. Great broadcasters know really good stories of players. And then over time, he had so much institutional knowledge built up that he could be talking about the 1955 Dodgers in the first person in 1990. No one else could do that. And yeah. It was just, he was an amazing, amazing person in baseball history. And there's some great broadcasters, you know, Jack Buck, you know, you think of Red Barber, all these great ones. But Vin Scully, for his length of time, may be the greatest.
Eric, what's your childhood memories?
I mean, don't forget, like, he was also a national broadcaster in the playoffs when with or without the Dodgers. So he was obviously a voice of baseball that I grew up with as well. The few times that we went to Dodger Stadium for on a work basis and being in that press room with him, just being in the same room, and you just hearing his voice saying something as innocuous as, I think I'd like to have a muffin with my coffee today. And it just gives you goosebumps to hear his voice, no matter what it came out of his mouth. Oh, has anyone seen my pen? And it's just like, wow, that's the golden voice. That is Vin Scully. That is the the voice of a million people.
I think the word you think of is class. He was probably like the classiest guy. I mean, you think of Eric Carey as not, you know, drunk, sloppy. I mean, you looked at Vin Scully, come on, dress perfectly, speak perfectly, but not in a way that was above anyone. There was nothing patronizing about the way he spoke. He spoke like you were his friend, like you would understand everything he said. It was very respectful. It's a huge loss.
And also, not only that, because, like, of course, the amount of times that he's delved in and out of pop culture, not on his own accord, but did you know, X-Files, Chris Carter, the creator of the X-Files, he created the Gillian Anderson's character, Dana Scully. He named her, he wanted to call her Scully because he was a big Dodger fan, and that was his homage to Vin Scully.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Scully is named after Scully.
Yep.
I never knew that. I mean, I was just having a quick look because, you know, I obviously didn't have the experience that you guys did, but, you know, but the name is, even for someone of my limited knowledge, is so synonymous with true baseball greatness. But I was just having a quick look, discovered his love of baseball at the age of 8 when he saw the results of the second game of the 36 World Series. He was in a laundromat when he saw it, and he felt a pang of sympathy for the badly defeated New York Giants, who just lost the game 18-4 to the New York Yankees. Love it. I mean, big Giants fan.
Get a sense, Gouldy, to get a sense, he played college baseball at Fordham University.
Yeah.
He played against George H.W. Bush, the older Bush, when the older played at Yale in the game. I have the box score posted it. I mean, that's just, I mean, he spanned time.
But that's also amazing, given his association with the Dodgers, that actually he started out as a Giants fan. And it wasn't just baseball. He also did other sports as well, didn't he? Did NFL football. He did PGA Tour golf commentary. I mean, the man was a man of many talents, not just baseball.
And, of course, one thing that I retweeted and put in our social handles is this amazing stat that when he was a young broadcaster at a baseball game, he did a Philadelphia Athletics game that Connie Mack was managing in his last season when he was a young whippersnapper in the broadcast booth, which just goes to show that the overlap was there. So the Connie Mack era going into the career of Vin Scully spans 130 seasons, which just right there just is mind-boggling on its own.
Yeah.
Guys, he's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
And why wouldn't he?
What a
rest lesson. In peace. What and one thing before we go on to the next segment, which usually I'll do the next segment, I'll be doing my baseball book of the week. But for this segment, I just want to say that there's a lot of that you'd think for such a man of high esteem and stature like Vin Scully, that there'd be some baseball books about him. There's one that's called Pull Up a Chair, written by Kurt Smith, which is an okay book about Vin Scully, but not the greatest. There's another one that says, I Saw It on the Radio by Rich Wolf, which I think is a great title itself. I Saw It on the Radio, all about Vin Scully. But again, it sort of falls flat. However, the LA Times, just even before the announcement of his passing, were about to release a book called The Voice. And it's going to be full of photographs and memorabilia and stories about Vin Scully's career, which is only available on pre-order at the moment. So keep an eye out for The Voice. A book all about Vin Scully coming up to a reputable book vendor near you. Moving on.
Okay, we're moving into the seventh inning stretch. For those of you listening at home, time to just stretch those arms out. And how appropriate is that? Because this gives us our chance to have our own Vin Scully, that is, of course, Eric, talk about the culture of baseball. So what's our baseball book of the week, big guy?
Our baseball book of the week this week is all about to do with, hey, Canada.
Yeah,
you're right. Canada's pastime. Now, when I was in Italy a few weeks ago doing stuff with Major League Baseball game development, I've met some, like I said, wonderful coaches from the MLB coaching staff, and some of them were actually Canadian. And one of them actually said he listened to our podcast, and he said, you should do something about this book. It's called Our Game 2, basically a book all about Canadian baseball. Big shout out to Gianmarco Ferrioni and Warren Campbell and the guys who actually wrote this book, which is Andrew North and a lot of other contributors. And it goes everything you need to know about how baseball is also steeped in history north of the border in Canada, not just the Blue Jays, not just the Expos, not just other stuff, but things, as we mentioned before, a league of their own kind of thing. There were a lot of Canadian women and Canadian baseball teams that were involved. And also it goes deeply about how Canadians during the war would play baseball overseas, Wembley Stadium, U.S. forces against Canadian forces. There was a game 2 days before the D-Day landings at Wembley Stadium. Unfortunately, the U.S. won't beat Canada in that game at Wembley Stadium, but I can't recommend this book enough without going into too much detail. Also, perfect bathroom reading. You open up in any place, you learn a bit of history about Canadian baseball and how it does matter up north as well.
And integrated baseball as well, too.
I mean, exactly. Everything about Jackie Robinson. A lot of Black Canadians will go down to the Negro Leagues to play baseball as well as north of the border. It's all in here. Our game too, and if a story on Canadian baseball.
Super nice stuff. Love it. Okay, I'll be looking out for that one. We move on the baseball cultural reference, and now I always do this with a certain sense of trepidation. Eric, have you got some awful baseball music for me?
Awful is, I guess it's a matter of opinion how awful it is. For you, it's always a matter of opinion. I do have a baseball song for you. Yesterday was the anniversary, the 27th anniversary of the death of Mickey Mantle. We lost Mickey Mantle in 1995. And basically there is a song that was written in 1956 by Teresa Brewer, written by Teresa Brewer as well. She went to a Yankees game. She was a Yankees game and she fell in love with Mickey Mantle. And she was with a friend of hers who was in the music industry. And then she's, when they left Yankee Stadium, she says, "Do you think, Mickey Mantle would he write, be in a baseball song with me?" He goes, "Well, we can only ask." And they actually managed to ask Mickey Mantle, "Do you want to be in a song?" And they said, he said, "Sure." So Teresa Brewer came out with this song. Now, it's only 1:44 long, so even for your attention span, Johnny.
I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, the fella with the celebrated swing. Oh, I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, the one who drives me batty every spring. If I don't make a hit with him, my heart will break in two. I wish that I could catch him and pitch a little woo. I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
Mickey you.
Mickey me.
And that's who. I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, his muscles are a mighty sight to see. Oh, I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, the one I wanna steal right home with me. Oh, I'd sacrifice most anything to win his many charms. I'd like to be a fly ball and pop right in his arms. Oh, I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
Mickey Mantle. I love you.
Who, me?
Who, I love you.
Not Yogi Berra?
Who, I love you.
It was 1:41 too long. Guys, come on. Write a song. Write a good song with some good melodies. Sing it well.
It's Mickey Mantle's baseball.
It doesn't matter. It was all about Mickey Mantle. The song was rubbish. The singing was rubbish. The lyrics were inane. It's a terrible song. No one in their right mind, no matter how much they love baseball, would put that on their hi-fi system.
I disagree. So you have to understand that there is lyrics and there's music. It has great big band sound to it. I mean, I love the big
yes!
Cool. You don't know, like, I know on North Bath Radio, you play like 70s and 80s.
What is it about? But,
like,
North?
There was a 50s.
Where
the 50s
is this
had
North?
This great big band sound, buddy.
Wait, I love the big band sound from the 50s. Yeah, that is not it.
1956, by the way, 1956 was the year that they were phasing out 78 RPMs.
Vinyl. Yeah, couldn't.
And so if you can find them, you can actually find on vinyl, I Love Mickey. But if you can find the 78, it's worth a lot of money. But it's out there somewhere. There are some 78 RPM versions on vinyl of I Love Mickey by Teresa Brewer.
Did you love Mickey, JC? And I'm not talking about the music now. Did you love Mickey Mantle?
I don't want to besmirch the dead. I mean, he was, you know, he was a carouser and a drinker and, you know, a tough personality. I think, you know, we talk about Joe DiMaggio and the demons he faced. Mickey Mantle had his own set of demons from his upbringing and, you know, coal country in Oklahoma. He struggled too. So not necessarily my fave, but I like the song.
Yeah. So there, and I guess if we're going to stay in the pop culture a bit, which sort of ties in with this, the movie 61, based on Roger Maris's 1961 season of breaking Babe Ruth's record.
I'm ashamed to tell you, I still haven't seen it. I'm ashamed to tell you that.
So, you know what the irony is? Billy Crystal directed 1961.
Spinal Tap.
And he's in Spinal Tap, which you also haven't seen.
Yeah, so, but I have seen When Harry Met Sally.
I'll give my connection, which is I've pitched batting practice to Billy Crystal before.
Have you?
Yeah. I grew up with his daughter. So
that's my, because Mickey Mantle obviously features heavily in the film 61 asterisk, by the way. I don't know if you, it is on the movie poster. It doesn't portray Mickey Mantle very well because he was a drunk, because he's a womanizer. But you can't deny the fact he's one heck of a baseball player.
And he was the one in 61 that was expected to beat the record, wasn't
he? Yes. All Yankees fans were cheering for Mickey Mantle instead of Roger Maris. They'd rather Mickey Mantle because he was a true Yankee. And
He had a pretty horrific knee injury. He tripped on a sprinkler at Yankee Stadium early in his career in the World Series. And you wonder how, even with all his drinking, his carousing, going out all night and playing, if he hadn't had that injury, he would have been perhaps even greater.
Well, that really fascinates me that he had that sort of those demons and therefore that edge, and yet he was so loved. And Roger Maris, from what I've read about him, just seemed like a really nice, clean living, down to earth guy, and everybody hated the poor bloke.
Well, because Mickey Mantle was a Yankee through and through. He had come up through the Yankee system.
Right.
Maris had played for other teams. He didn't personify the Yankee history in the same way.
Well, you mean he was a nice person? It didn't personify Yankee history.
Evil empire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, there goes Mr. Jeter. Anyway, another story. Okay. Well, I don't know how to close this one off other than just to say, yet again, you've come up with a terrible song. All right.
Moving on.
Answer time to the trivia question. Do you want to repeat the trivia for our listeners, Eric?
Yes, indeed. I asked you earlier on the show, who is the current active leader in most consecutive games played in Major League Baseball? And I asked you, is it A, Matt Olson, B, Dansby Swanson, or C, Austin Riley? This, ironically or coincidentally, just happened to be Atlanta Braves.
Can I go first?
Yes, you can go first.
You know, given I'm the Braves fan, definitively it's not Austin Riley, who has not been a part of the Braves organization as long as Dansby. But obviously that's the only team they've played for in the major leagues. Whereas obviously we know Matt Olson came to the Braves from the A's, and I'm pretty damn sure that he's been playing longer than Dansby. So on that basis alone, I'm going with Matt Olson.
I actually don't think that the streak is all that long. Right. I mean, it's not four or five seasons. I bet you it's no more than two, to be honest.
Yeah. So basically we're looking obviously with Whit Merrifield at stopping at 5.53. That is correct. So it'll have to be lower than 5.53.
So. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So you know that what's that three seasons, three and
three
a half.
Max.
Right. Yeah. So any of them could be it. I know Olson he's definitely played a full season before without missing a game, but I actually think it's Dansby Swanson, because I think that he played a full season last year and is still going this year. So I will go with Swanson.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, this is gonna be fun. Austin Riley currently is at 233 consecutive games.
233.
Correct.
Okay.
And counting at the time of recording. Dansby Swanson is at 242.
Oh.
At the time of recording.
So I was right when I said it's definitely not Austin Riley. So at least I got one thing right.
Matt Olson.
Come on, buddy!
249.
Yes! Yay! Yes! I'm beating Josh! Ladies and gentlemen, stop the world. I want to get off. I've beaten JC in a Braves trivia competition. Baby, I love this world. Sorry, I may be getting a little carried away here.
I feel like that.
Look at JC's face.
The planets have aligned.
I'm happy for you. Goldie, if this makes your day.
Oh, buddy. No, people have got, if you're listening, if you're listening and you're not looking, you've got to go to YouTube because that was the greatest face I've ever seen. JC was smiling and desperate and trying to be happy for me, but there was a grimace. Wait a second. Blood coming down your lip.
Sorry, guys, I forgot to press record. We're going to have to do that again.
Yeah, baby.
I think that's the first time all season. Right?
All season. It's the first time ever.
Okay. Well, I'm happy. Yay. I don't know what to say.
I don't know. I mean,
I won the dizzy bat race. It's never
Anyways, there you go. So Matt Olson is current. So basically, Matt Olson at 249 games and counting only needs to play every single game and every single season up to the year 2036.
To take on Cal Ripken's
record. So it's doable.
It's never been broken. It's never going to be broken, guys. I'm guaranteeing it, and I'll come back from my grave to confirm it in 40, 50 years' time. Okay? Okay, that was great stuff. Thank you for that, Eric. What a brilliant question. I want that to be on record. I want that particular section to be out there in social media.
Hang it
in
the Louvre.
I'm thinking Facebook. I'm thinking Twitter. Yeah, absolutely. Let's get some posters made. Let's get it out on the streets. Let's just basically rejoice. Meanwhile, moving on, we need to pump up the Johnny and Josh show, guys. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You've got the old buttons at the bottom that we need you to hit and subscribe to and say your love and tell the world that Johnny Gould got a trivia question right. And JC, the walking encyclopedia of baseball, got it wrong. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first.
It was close.
Was it close? He went with the wrong one. Excuse me. Close isn't good enough. He lost. End off. Okay. Moving on. Fantasy baseball. It is with great sadness that I have to announce that Behind Home Plate, which was the fantasy baseball pod that I've been doing with James Holden, the legendary fantasy baseball player, and my dear friend, is no more. We just could not get the timetable to work.
You made it sound like he was dead.
Yeah, no, he's not dead. He's not dead.
Moment of silence.
James Holden is no more.
Is no more, yeah.
He's still amazing. Alive, folks. Don't panic.
He's still good. For those of you who don't know, James works with the BBC, and he's an incredibly important person. He's unbelievably busy, and we just couldn't make it. We couldn't make it work. So apologies to any fantasy baseball fans out there that between the two of us, we just can't make the timetable work. But thankfully, I've still got my baseball brothers. I've still got Eric. I've still got JC and David somewhere who's out there in the ether.
And unfortunately, even though that Behind Home Plate is no more, it won't stop Johnny from continuing to talk about fantasy baseball.
It's what the people want, Eric.
Okay. And by the people, you mean Johnny.
My friends. Exactly. My friend.
And James Holden, who's not dead.
By the way, we should also mention Young Nat Coombs, the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show, part of the same stable, part Young. Of the whole Ted Fred. Well, he's younger than us. Right. In fact, he looks irritatingly young for his age. He's a lot older than he looks. Which is not something you can say about any of us.
He's got that Peter Pan vibe to him.
He has. I mean, and I hate the fact that he's such a nice bloke. I want to hate him, if I'm brutally honest, but there you go. He's a lovely bloke, and it's a great show. So if you're into your NFL, do check out the Nat King Show at the NC Show. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, we're on everything. We're social media kings and queens. That's it, guys. That's it. Episode 5, Season 3. It's been an absolute joy. JC, what have you got to look forward to the next month?
Just counting down the days. Currently in season, we got our schedule together, getting ready to go on tour. Yeah, I mean, it's I can still compete at a reasonably high level of sport. I mean, that's, you know, I'm not with the Riverbank Ramblers, you know, with a bunch of, you know, people who just love the game but are no good.
Hey, we lost both games of the tour. For those listening, you may remember from my Channel 5 baseball days, I have a team of iconic cricketers. Our badge, our cap, is the color and the shape of the Battenberg cake. Our epitaph, our motto, which is in Latin, is direct translation means we may be useless on the field, but no one beats us in the tea room. Extraordinary iconic team, and we lost both games, and the opposition had 14-year-olds in it. So that's indicative of just
how bad. What I love, Gouldie, is that you ask me a question and then you just start talking about yourself.
Hey, nothing's going to change, buddy. We're doing that for 25 years. Why do you think that's happening?
I know. Bless you.
And I've got plans too. Thanks for asking.
Oh, yeah. What are you up to, Eric? You do anything exciting? Nothing. Okay.
I will be involved more Major League Baseball stuff coming up in September. There's a lot of World Baseball Classic qualifiers coming up. Keep your eye on that if you're in the European baseball.
And let's mention, so the GB women's baseball team played in its first ever European championships, got its first ever win, beating the Czech Republic in women's baseball, right, which was really great. And the U18s, the junior national team, as time of recording, are 1-1 in the junior European championships. They won the qualifier, which was a big deal to get back to the top tier of European baseball at the junior level, which is very important for developmental purposes. So, you know, good times for GB baseball. I know, Gouldie, you mentioned the London series. One of the positions at BSUK, Baseball Softball UK, is hiring is a legacy manager to work on trying to create a legacy from these games. And a lot of hope, a lot of reason to be very optimistic about the future of baseball in Great Britain.
But I'm so pleased to hear you say that, because I know, you know, we've known each other a long time, and we've had many a private conversation where, you know, your head goes down and you didn't see that progression. You genuinely, from the heart, you are feeling that we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I do believe that there are a lot of people in place right now who are very professional in their approach. I think that there's a little bit of money trickling through, which is always a huge part of it. Yeah. And there's reason for hope. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I definitely feel more optimistic than I felt in a long time.
Absolutely. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. Thank you so much, Deitch, and both of you. Looking forward to having your company, hopefully in the next month, for our September episode. But that's it from us. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to Season 3, Episode 5 of The Johnny and Josh Show. We look forward to having your company, hopefully in about a month's time. Till then, guys, enjoy your baseball and take care.